Joe's freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
I don't read the internet, guys.
Take the bull by the hands.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
And Brooke Wire, you are it. And Brooke, you are it.
Styled by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Let the fire!
Good morning, everybody. Hello. Happy Friday. It's Brock and Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com, Seattle Sports application, and all of the podcast platforms.
Mighty good-looking formal Friday hoodie you got on.
Thank you. I wanted to go formal for you guys, and the Mariners sent over these Mariners hoodie deals.
Was it hoodie night? Is it tonight?
It's coming up.
It's tonight.
I've definitely seen the commercials with that one dude who's on wearing the hoodie.
Yeah.
15,000.
Is that
tonight.
Just like a dude in their promo department? Like, who is that guy?
Could be, because I've seen Freddie in some of those, and okay. I know that he's
We know Ashley Cox, who used to work here, sometimes has been in there.
Yes. So yeah. I just assume he's somebody in there. I always think that's funny that it's not like a model or an actor.
A real model.
Let's just grab somebody who works here and just throw him in the hoodie and take a few pictures and slap
it's
up there.
More authentic.
It is. No, I agree. I'm not knocking it. I think it's great.
Maybe it says something like they have good looking enough people that they can do that.
Maybe it is. And yeah, I mean, it certainly.
As a former model, Maura, you have to.
Yeah. What did you think?
Right off the bat.
Yeah. You're supposed to defend the model turf or something and let everybody know.
The model union.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you have to hire professionals.
If you have to be tall enough, thin enough, high enough cheekbones, the whole thing. So
I don't even, like, at this point, I don't even feel like there is such a thing anymore because, like, social media has taken over. There's no such thing as models.
Probably
a good thing because, we won't get into all the unhealthy weight and everything that they wanted me to stay at. So I'm not pro modeling.
You think models are gone? There's no more models.
I mean, there are.
Okay. It still
not
seems
to the level
like there's
that it
some.
Used to be because I think Instagram and, like, I just don't think there's the constraints on it that there used to be. And I think that's a good thing.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. Every time I click on, like, you know, a website or like a clothing website to see if I want to buy something, the people wearing the clothes seem much better looking than me. And it always looks a lot better on them. So I'm always like, yeah, all right. Well, that looks great. And
then I get it. That's how they get you to buy.
Yeah.
Huh. I don't look like that man at all. Like, yeah. My body's not shaped like his.
They're not completely wiped out. But okay. I think we have gotten to a point where there's a little more acceptance for different body types. And
well, last night, I'll just clue you guys in. I did go to Scott's event, which was really fun. So went over to Moss Bay Hall, which is a really cool facility, by the way. Really nice. Brand new. It's only a few months old. Same people as Queen Anne Beer Hall.
And is it a similar setup then?
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, yeah, I would
communal, kind of big open.
Yes, exactly. Okay. And it was great. Really tons of people. Oh, my gosh. There were a couple hundred people there, which was awesome. Nice. Line out the door to check in. And awesome. That was great. And then so we got to figure, you know, but the price of the ticket just with the entrance cost, they had to have, I don't know, 25, 30 grand in terms of money raised before the auction and stuff. So that was really cool. Rick Riz played a big role. He bought a bunch of tickets through his group and he hosted a little thing, which was cool. Scott was walking around. Jill, Scott's wife, this is really her project. She was walking around. JP was walking around early, as was Cal. And then the three of them, Scott, JP, and Cal, went up on stage where Rick kind of hosted a Q&A deal for them, which was fun. And some people had a chance to ask questions. And I don't know, it was very open and pretty easy to chat with them. But none of that was the highlight. There were, I would say, three highlights to the evening.
Okay.
The first was that I had a wonderful opportunity to meet a whole bunch of fans of the show, which was great. Most of the people had one thing on their mind, which was to ask me about Brock, which was great. I was just like, yeah, just sitting there answering people's questions about Brock Heward, which is just awesome.
What are the questions?
Oh, dude, I can't even tell you.
Okay.
Just like, hey, is Brock doing such and such? Like, yeah, I don't know. Like, oh, okay, because he was a class ahead of me at Puyallup, and I'm like, yeah,
can't help you.
Great, I don't know what to tell you. I'm not Brock. I might be Brock's caddy, right? I may have made a whole career off of being near Brock, but I am not Brock. So, yeah, that was there were a lot of Brock fans who had questions for me. The rest of the folks who I met who knew the show were all fans of Ranked. Every one of them, a person, men, women, you name it. Everybody was like, I got to tell you, I love Ranked. This one guy was like, okay, so I got to love the music stuff you guys do in Ranked. He's like, every day I'm driving, it's like 9:45. I'm like, oh, I got to go see what Ranked is. I was like, yeah, it's kind of dumb, but fun, right? He's like, oh, it's super dumb, but it's awesome. So that was good.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So sorry, Maura. I don't know what to tell you.
That totally makes me think that I'm in the wrong.
Yeah, across a lot of demographics there. Yeah, it wasn't just one kind of person.
Yeah, no, there was one woman who said the same thing. Shout out to her. I think her name is Angela. Very, very nice.
Awesome.
All right, so that was observation number one. Observation number two. As great as the 200-300 people were that were there, none of the people there, including Cal. Yes, including Cal. None of the people there could compete with the dozen or so dogs that were also there, which was phenomenal. Yeah. What a great idea. If you're going to do a fundraiser for the Okanagan Animal Shelter, have some dogs there. There were a whole bunch of puppies that were there. And then a couple other people brought their golden retrievers, which was fun. I did not think Gertie was ready for something like
that. Kind of big time socialization.
She was a little, Plus, I figured we were going to be there for maybe 2 hours. That's probably four or five poops. So, I didn't think it was right.
I mean, if there are other puppies there, you expect some accidents.
None of them pooped like her. I'll tell you that much, man. None of them. And then there was, what are those big white dogs? Are they Samoyeds? There's one of those there, and I love them because they just howl so much. They do that, like, half howl, where, like, they're trying not to, but they do it anyway.
Can't help it.
Which I think is really funny. And, like, when Riz was talking, he had a whole thing where he was, like, asking people, and people were cheering. And every time they did, the dog would go, ow, ow, ow. Like, they can't help it, but they want to, but then they know they're not supposed to, so... That was a nice highlight of last night. So those were both pretty cool. The last thing I would say, and I thought this was pretty amazing. So if you remember, we had Scott on, what was that, Tuesday? And he said, oh, it's going to be great. Cal's going to be there. JP's going to be there. So we knew that was part of the plan. Those guys had signed up to be a part of it, et cetera. We knew that George and Logan had donated some time with them later as one of the auction items. We knew Luis was doing the fishing excursion, which, you know, I was thinking at the time, like, I mean, that's really nice of him to do. But also, that guy just loves to go fishing. So he's, like, pretty psyched to have an excuse to go do it. So Luis just showed up last night. Oh, there it is. There's my music for Luis.
Are you able to contain yourself?
Well, yeah. His last three outings, plus how horrible he was in September, has definitely given me, like, a little bit of space.
Oh,
I'm seeing him with a little bit more clarity now than I had before as a baseball player. Okay. That's just as a player, because he's kind of unlike, hey, man, let's go time. Like, you kind of have to either be the guy who starts slow, but if you do, you got to be the guy who finishes strong, and you finished poorly, and now you're starting slowly. Like, let's pick it up here a little bit, because you're starting to see a little pattern emerging with Luis and an inability to put guys away and some command issues. So, yeah, I've got a little distance between me and him on the playing side of things, but he's still one of, like, my favorite people just to kind of see. Like, he just seems – his life seems awesome. He seems like he goes through life with an incredible joy – and, like, not caring that much about much of anything. And I don't know, there's something about the way he walks around that just kind of makes me happy. And he didn't need to be there last night. He showed up for Scott. I would imagine, and we can ask Shannon about this, she's gonna join us at 8, that Scott's trip down to the Dominican, where he went to go see Luis, went fishing with him, and spent that time with him and his family, I'm going to guess that meant a lot to Luis, to the point where he's like, yeah, I'll go help out this guy.
Oh, that's
he
great.
Came down to see me. I don't know that, but I'm going to guess that played a role in it. But yeah, he's just like, yeah, it's an off day. I'm kind of bored. No family around. Like, yeah, come down.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so we did.
That's really
which
cool.
I just think is a really nice statement about him, about Scott, about kind of where the team is at. So
when are you going fishing with Luis?
Yeah, I'm not going to do that. As much as I love Luis, it's not enough to get me out on a boat all day. Like, you know, I like him. I don't want him to see me vomiting. That doesn't seem like
boats. I'm going to add this. I'm still making my list. Your list of worst takes. Yeah. I'm going to do my own ranking.
Hold on. This is not a bad take.
Don't like boats.
It makes me vomit.
Yeah, I've gotten seasick too. You can take things for that.
I've taken things. They don't do anything. They make me, I still vomit. Who am I going to trust more, you or the boat captain who told me the only way to make sure you don't get seasick is to not get on a boat? And after that time, when I got seasick on a little dinner cruise around Maui in no waves, I was like, all right. I'm never doing this again.
Yes.
Like, I've tried it too many times. It always costs money. It's always a commitment. And it's not like one of those things where you're like, okay, I just want to get off now. Like, you're out on a boat.
That's why
you're
I don't
out
like
there.
That's why I don't like it. Can't Irish exit at a boat party.
Thank you. So Justin's take on boats is much worse than mine.
His is because he constantly has to be bopping to different places and seeing different people.
But mine is because I vomit. And not just while I'm on the boat. For hours afterwards, I'm going to vomit.
Okay. Right. Well,
I had that problem once and I took non-drowsy Dramamine the next evening.
Oh, cool. I had one little problem.
Have you tried non-drowsy Dramamine?
Every freaking time I go on a boat, yes, I've tried the Dramamine. That stuff doesn't do squat. That stuff's an old wives' tale. You vomit, and then you vomit some more, and then you vomit a little bit more.
Try Jim Beam instead next time.
Anyway, kudos to Luis for showing up. I thought that was pretty darn cool. All right. Let's see. Let's take a quick break here. We got a ton of stuff today. We got Need to Know, obviously. And then I have a surprise for Moore at 7:30, which she's, I don't think, going to like, but we'll do it anyway. We got Shannon Dreyer at 8 o'clock.
I had my suspicions. You guys were talking about songs a lot when I got here.
I'm just saying, we got a little fun surprise at 7:30. G. Scott at 8:30. Stacy's going to be in today. Open phone lines today. We got a lot going on. Oh, how did your ancestors make it across on the Mayflower? Mine? You think my ancestors were on the Mayflower? What? What do you think I am? you may have the wrong member of the Brock and Salk family, or maybe this is just another one of those people asking me questions about Brock, because I don't think there were a tremendous number of Russian Jews on the old Mayflower. We'll come right back with everything you actually need to know next on Brock and Salk.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, go time for the Mariners. They had their opportunity to kind of recollect themselves, get home, get reacquainted, and now their second homestand of the year will start tonight. Couple more National League teams coming in, rather. Cubs, then the Reds. Obviously, it's way too early for scoreboard watching, but just for a little perspective, anybody care to guess where the Mariners are in the standings this morning? How many games out are the Mariners?
Three.
Two. The Mariners are a whopping two games behind Texas after the Rangers were shut out last night by the A's, 1-0. Have you seen the A's closer, by the way? You don't want to be down against the A's late. Martin Miller or something like that? I forget his name. He is freaking filthy. 104 miles an hour. Last night, look at his at-bat. I think it was to Wyatt Langford. It's like 102, 101, 104, 103, 102, 104, 102.
Oh, yes, Mason Miller.
Mason Miller. Sorry.
25 years old.
Dude is got some significant gas. So you kind of want to not be down against Oakland late. Anyway, Texas shut out last night. You're only two back. The Astros. Anybody like to know the Astros record to start the year?
What is it, Salk?
The Astros right now are 4-10. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
I mean, I know they got swept by the Yankees early, but the Rangers or the Royals are having their way with them now. Astros are 4-10, so it's not like the division has run away. You have obviously missed an opportunity to gain some ground on them, but they've missed their opportunity as well. Bryce Miller, be on the hill tonight against Jordan Wicks. Reminder, that game tonight is on Apple TV, so if you are looking for it and can't find it en route, it is on Apple TV and, of course, here on the radio on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. Some good news on the injury front. An update yesterday from Mr. Scott's service on a couple of relievers.
Matt Brash threw a live BP, and that went very well. So we'll keep our fingers crossed. He can keep progressing there. Santos has picked up, he's in a throwing program now, working his way towards getting on the mound, but he's a little bit farther behind. So I don't want to get too much more detail, no timelines, nothing like that, but it has been very positive.
So shake it up.
Somebody's having a good time back there.
Somebody's playing the Cars in the background. Anyway, good for Scott and good for Brash, good for Santos. Kind of crazy. We haven't even seen those guys, too. Like, pretty huge contributors. I don't think that they are, would have made a huge difference in your record right now. It's not like your bullpen has been a major source of problems, but it'll obviously be great to get those guys back sooner rather than later.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
We're running out of John Schneider shows because there's only a couple weeks left before the NFL draft. But good stuff yesterday with Wyman and Bob. He was asked about some of the 30 visits, specifically the two with quarterbacks, Spencer Rattler and Bo Nix. Here's what John had to say about that. And pay special attention to the end of this.
Yeah, no, we don't study quarterbacks. Just because we've only drafted two, I get it.
Yeah.
We want to get to know these guys a little bit better and spend time with them. And Spencer's a real impressive guy, and so is Bo. And it was fun to be able to spend a little bit more time with those guys, have the coaches be able to spend more time with them on the board. And, yeah, you want to be cautious of their time as well. They're out here on West Coast visits, so try to set those up when they're, you know, visiting the Rams, the Chargers, the Niners, and try to fit those in. And we love Sam. We love what we did, being able to acquire Sam. You know, we talked about the age. He's got the experience, but that doesn't preclude us from, you know, what we do in the draft.
Oh, really?
Say again.
Say that. What was that? Like, I kind of feel like it does preclude them from doing something at the draft, but the fact that John says that outright, okay, that's pretty interesting, right? I feel like that might be the most important thing he said. It's cool information on kind of why they have those conversations and why you'd bring in a Rattler or Nix. I mean, that's great, but Sam Howell does not preclude us from drafting a quarterback, okay? That's something that I'm going to certainly be keeping in the back of my mind, or maybe even the front of it, over the next 2 weeks here.
No selfies with them this year, though.
No. Well, that's probably fine. I don't think they needed to do that. Let's see. Here's a little bit more from John on what they've learned.
I think maybe just being more patient, maybe. You know, I think we were hyper-aggressive, and we felt like we needed... Yeah, we did. We felt like we needed a lot. Mm-hmm. And so we made a trade with Tennessee. We traded for Vickerson and Lindell White. We moved around several times, and we almost moved out of... We almost moved totally out of an area that would have cost us. Earl, so being patient.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's interesting to see. It's been, you know, 15 years or so now almost for John, and I'm sure he's got that entire process down pat.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
It was a huge moment yesterday in the Shohei Ohtani gambling case, as his former interpreter, Ipe Mitsuhara, has been charged now with federal bank fraud after allegedly stealing more than $16 million. Here's the U.S. attorney.
Our investigation has revealed that due to the position of trust he occupied with Mr. Ohtani, Mr. Mitsuhara had unique access to Mr. Ohtani's finances. Mr. Mitsuhara used and abused that position of trust in order to take advantage of Mr. Ohtani. Mr. Mitsuhara used and abused that position of trust in order to plunder Mr. Ohtani's bank account to the tune of over $16 million.
I love the use of the word plunder, because that's exactly what this feels like. You got to go through and really read the whole thing. I mean, there's a ton of stuff. Mitsuhara identifying himself falsely as Ohtani, tricking employees. And just I think the language thing played a big role in this, because he was able to, I don't know, maybe prey on the fact that they were both Japanese and he spoke the language, and Ohtani didn't really talk to anybody else. So fascinating stuff there. We'll talk a little bit more about it later. Also, I guess the LIV guys can still play. Certainly Bryson DeChambeau can, with play suspended last night. He led the field at 7 under. You got to give Tiger some credit, man. He hung in there 1 under after 13 holes, playing in incredibly windy conditions. So we'll see how he handles playing 23 holes today. That's not going to be fun on his back at all. But we'll keep you updated throughout the morning. That is everything you need to know.
Did you watch all day yesterday, or did you?
I watched a lot. Yeah. I mean, I fell asleep at some point. Let's not get carried away. But yeah, I watched quite a bit of it. Yeah.
Okay, because I was wondering about that, because I know it's not your favorite one to watch.
It's not my favorite. So two things that I kind of was thinking about. One, you're right, it's not my favorite. I don't hate it. I get it. But I do just think the whole, like, Augusta thing is obnoxious.
I totally get it.
And I struggle with the name.
I get it.
I struggle with the pomp and circumstance. Mm-hmm. I struggle with their legacy of racism and sexism and everything else. I struggle with that. Mm-hmm. Not that I don't think people can change, because they can, but the way it is, like, held on a pedestal and has been throughout all of that history has always been a little challenging
for
me.
Kind of ignored on the other front. What is the, speaking of struggle, where's Jordan?
He doubled one.
Okay.
He had double bogey on one,
not a good
and
one.
Then played even after that. I mean, he was fine. He just had like one bad hole. So I don't know. We'll see. He's only through 11 holes because they got cut off. Maybe he'll bounce back. This is usually a course where he plays pretty well in. The other thing that's kind of weird is when you watch golf every week, it feels maybe a little less special. Does that make sense? Like, totally. I like, for those people that only check in 3-4 times a year during the majors or whatever, like, oh, you get reacquainted to all these golfers. Like, it's new. It's something that's unique. When you're watching it every week, it's like, yeah, all right, there's another golf tournament. There's some better players. It's a more familiar course. It's nicer.
More people there.
There's a lot more pressure. But, like, you know, it's the same game I watch every other Thursday as I'm taking a nap. So, I don't know. I loved it. I had a great time. But maybe I don't. Maybe the amount of golf I watch has lessened the impact a little bit.
It's diluted it. Yeah.
Yeah, certainly on Thursday. By Sunday, it's all in. But the Thursday, Friday are like, yeah, it's like every other Thursday, Friday where I'm just sitting around watching, you know, randos play golf. Okay, coming up, Bruce Feldman joined us yesterday. You want to talk about a guy who loves Michael Penix? He made a statement. Well, he kind of made two, but one out loud about Michael Penix that you got to hear next. Brock and Salk, Sales Sports on 710.
This is Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Weekdays 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
And all kinds of text messages coming in at the moment. Let's see. I could go the rest of my life without hearing Journey. That's not nice. Salk, you did a Journey sing-off before. That was when a guy totally choked after claiming he did Journey all the time at karaoke. I don't remember that.
True.
Maybe we did. I'll sing my butt off from Carter and Tacoma. Def Leppard's my favorite band. I've seen them a couple of times and never seen Journey, and I sing karaoke. All right, well, get ready, 253.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I think when we did karaoke one night, let's see, Joe Davis did Neil Diamond. I think Bruce did Journey, Don't Stop Believing. Steve Perry, I think he went up there.
That takes some guts. Not gonna lie, that takes you better really believe in yourself to try to hit that song by yourself. All right, Bruce Feldman joins us right now. Let's get to some serious business. Talking about the draft 2 weeks from today. Bruce, good morning. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. You know what takes some serious guts, Brock? Trying to ask Bob Stoops just one more question in the middle of a game.
So. Oh, you liked that in the opening week, did you?
Yes. I love that. I was like, I had visions of like, man, it's a good thing that's not Kyle Whittingham in a Pac-12 game or whatever league they're coaching.
Yes. What happened, Brock?
Well, you know, we push the envelope at the UFL, Salk. You know, we get access down there. And unlike Bruce, who, unfortunately, when you're a sideline reporter in college or the NFL, you're kind of cordoned to one area. I get to just hang out with the guys. So I'm talking to Bob, and I said, hey, do you mind, you know, live on TV if we kind of, you know, talk to you what you're seeing here? So we did a play, and I think we did a second play. And by the third one, he's like, okay, I got to go coach. All right? I'm done with this nonsense. So, made for good television, man. It was fun.
All right.
So, yep. That's what happened. See, you saw Bruce watches. He's a friend. He watches the UFL.
That does take a friend.
Yes, it does.
He must be a really good friend.
I would bet money that I'm a bigger Brock Heward fan than some of the people whose last name are Heward who live in the house with him or are now playing college sports somewhere.
I mean, if you're watching those UFL games, you must be. That is really, really impressive friendship right there.
Talk to me 2 weeks from today, Brucey. 2 weeks from today, this draft. Every one of them is unique. Every one of them is different, kind of like your own kids. Every one of them is just their own, marches to their own beat. Where does this draft in your eye fit?
I think it's a really good draft. It's a great draft for receivers. I think there's four that are really elite, and I think there's probably another eight or nine that I think will be big time contributors in the NFL pretty quick. Mm. I think there's a great offensive tackle and some really good offensive linemen in the draft. And then the quarterback part of this, there's obviously going to probably be, I think there may be six that go in the first round, and I think there'll probably be five that'll go in the first 15. But, the track record, and you and I have talked about this a lot offline, you know, it's hard to tell, you know, depending on what fit they go into, who's going to disappoint and how they're going to react to adversity. But it's, you know, because that usually tells the tale of, okay, how did the quarterbacks pan out? But I think it's a really good draft.
You fit into a large category of people that have the Seahawks taking Troy Faltano at number 16. What leads you to that pick?
Well, you need help up front there. I mean, there's a need. Obviously, you have familiarity with Grubb being the offensive coordinator there. He knows, you know, I think there's two truly elite offensive linemen coming out of the Pac-12 this year and coming out of the Pacific Northwest. Puaga is a guy everybody raves about, and Fultana is very similar in terms of that. I mean, I thought he was a dominant offensive lineman. Now they asked him to do some different things, and maybe it wasn't like he was playing in a Big Ten offense, you know. But I think that if he's still there, and I think he probably will still be there, but if he's still there, I think that would be a terrific fit for what the Seahawks need and what they're getting, just in terms of, you know, this is a, you know, there's definitely some, you know, depth issues up front. And he's also a guy I think who could play guard as well. And I think that also could help out in the short term.
You know, I'm looking through your Twitter and polarizing. And you're just quoting so many of these different scouts and analysts and coaches that you are networked to, Bruce. And it wasn't just about Michael Penix. It isn't just about Drake May. I think a lot of these QBs are polarizing. Is this about as polarizing a group? Saul had me do a little rapid fire that turned into a slow death crawl because I was just thinking through every one of his questions for me. Is this as polarizing a QB class, these six, as you can remember?
I think so, because there's stuff that you can, I mean, there's always going to be stuff, you know, unless it's Andrew Luck, I guess, that you could really nitpick about the quarterbacks in one way or another. But you have at the top, you have Caleb, who does some amazing stuff, but man, he holds on to the ball a long time. And can you, how long could you get away with that in the NFL? You know, living that way, not just like doing it occasionally, but living that way. Yeah. Then you have, you know, Jaden Daniels, who had a phenomenal year and kept getting better and better. And I thought, look, he's going to throw to two first round, two probably top 15 receivers that he had, but he played in the SEC and was a dynamic runner and got so much better as a passer. You know, I think there's a lot to like there, but I think there's a little bit of hesitation on, okay, are we seeing everything here with him? And he's also not the biggest guy. He's mm-hmm. taller, but kind of wiry, and how well will he hold up? Then there's Drake May, who, from the coaches I talked to who faced him, Drake May was actually the most polarizing of the quarterbacks. I think Penix is the most polarizing if you ask draft Twitter that. Mm-hmm. But if you ask the coaches who faced him, people are like kind of wowed by Penix's arm talent. It wasn't a dink and dunk offense. You know, we've talked about this a lot. He has battled through real adversity and come through the other side. Took a team that was 4-8 and was largely the same roster, and they went 25-3. You know, I'm a believer in Penix. Drake May, the part that gives some people pause, he can throw the heck out of it. He's got really good size. He's athletic. But unlike most of the other guys in this draft who transferred, except for him and J.J. McCarthy, he's actually played in two systems, though, also. He didn't transfer, but they went from a version of the air raid to what, you know, his offense last year with Chip Lindsey. And there are guys I talk to who love his talent, but they're also like, man, when we played him, we thought he'd get really scared in the pocket, and he wasn't the same, you know, didn't have the same feel for it that Sam Howell. He's bigger and throws it better. But so there's, you know, and then there's J.J. McCarthy, who didn't put up big stats, and they didn't ask him to throw it all over the place, but he won a ton of games. He can throw really well on the run, and he's a dynamic athlete, and there is a lot of stuff people really like. And when they meet with him, they get wowed by him, because I think Jim Harbaugh trained him to do stuff that probably, honestly, you were trained to do as an NFL guy, you know, a couple of decades ago that NFL coaches really like. JJ had that with Jim Harbaugh.
If you were looking for a quarterback, and you know, I don't know what the Seahawks are. They seem not to be, and that seems to be why they traded for Sam Howell and kind of have gone now in a different direction. But the quarterbacks are just so fascinating, especially in this group. Is there one trait that you look at and say either this is something you have to have, or this is the one trait that scares me? We've seen so many quarterbacks bust, and that rate is so challenging over the years. Is there any thread that you've ever kind of picked up on?
I mean, I think it's a couple of things. It's like, how savvy are they in terms of how well they see it and process information? I think that's a big thing. I mean, I was around Joe Burrow a lot his last year at LSU, and was really blown away by, he was like a coach on the field and how he commanded it and everything else. To me, that's a huge thing. You know, most of these guys have enough arm to be very good if they're in the right system. You know, whether they, you know, you don't need Joe Milton's arm to be a really successful NFL quarterback. I think the challenge for some of the other ones, like if I had the first pick in the draft, it'd be hard not to roll the dice on Caleb. But, you know, there's definitely stuff that would give you pause about him, though. And that would make me a little skeptical. If you ask me, if I had the second pick of the draft and I needed a quarterback and Caleb is not there, I'd have a hard time saying no to Michael Penix, because he made so many big-time throws. And I get it. He had three terrific receivers, and he had a really good offensive line. But I know this about him. I know he has battled through adversity and come through the other side. I know he is, you know, got an electric arm, and he is not afraid. You know, I go back to something Cam Cameron had once explained to me. He was like in the NFL, and he was like basically standing like almost cheek to cheek with me. He's like, this is open. And in college, guys are wide open. You know, Tim Tebow could get away with a lot of stuff, you know, because of all the spacing he had. Whereas in the NFL, if you can't really fit the ball in there and don't either have great anticipation or see it or really pinpoint accuracy to go with that arm talent, I think you could be really disappointing. And we know Penix can do that. To me, there's a lot I would be sold on with Penix if I needed a quarterback bad.
Yeah, he's Bruce Feldman. Twitter, at Bruce Feldman College Football, all over The Athletic. Great podcast he does with Stuart Mandel every week. You referenced now a couple times, and I don't know if everybody has read that piece, Bruce, that you wrote, and it was awesome, on Michael Penix at Indiana and some of the struggles. You and I were in a production meeting room together. You and I have talked about this a lot. I don't know how much that story really is out there. You know, you've said on a couple occasions now, what you love is he's overcome. He's come from the deepest of depths. I mean, I believe in your article, you had talked about him even like praying and crying and being on the ground. Like, I don't know if I can do this. Can you explain maybe anecdotally some of that to our audience?
Yeah, he, you know, four season ending injuries. And for a lot of guys, especially, you know, elite guys coming out of high school, which obviously, you know, one of the three of us was that, you know, what happens when you get adversity? What really happens to you? And what amazed me about Penix, and I went up to Seattle last year around this time and ended up having a long conversation with him. It went in a direction I did not expect it to go. He was very candid, more so than almost any other athlete I can remember in college in a while. And the more I learned about it was him just kind of giving me a window into where he was, not where he is, but where he was and how he came through it. And I think that takes an incredible amount of resolve and mental strength to push through it. And then not only to push through it, but not to bury it. And he was so candid about it. And then, you know, you talk to people who are around him in Indiana, where I think for some of them, and I'm talking about the people who are not at the Washington side of it, but I think for them, I think it was like, man, this guy's really struggled with all the medical stuff, and you don't know what's going on and everything. And that program kind of was spinning its wheels after he left. And he goes to Seattle, and he just ends up, I don't want to say he reinvents himself, because I just think he just keeps growing and maturing and evolving. And some of that other stuff, like, it's interesting when you get people to really open up about this. So EJ Manuel, you know, former first round quarterback from Florida State, very bright man, now is working in TV. I asked EJ, I was like, you know, the same question I'd asked Brock, this is for this story probably 2 months ago, was about the battling through adversity. Because if you talk to people who are in the NFL scouting space, they said the biggest reason why high level quarterbacks in the draft don't work out is because they can't handle the adversity when it hits them. And EJ said to me, he goes, you know, when I got up in Buffalo, I had like four injuries, and they were none of them, which were, I don't want to say they weren't, you know, very serious, but he was like, you start listening to a lot of stuff and you start, you know, you start doubting yourself and all these other things happen. And EJ was never able to get his NFL career really on track after any of that. Mm-hmm. And so he was like, that is a very real thing. And most people, and I'm talking about like very few people have ever been like an NFL quarterback or been a high, you know, first round pick or whatever. There's very few people who know what it's like to live in that world and to have the doubt. So when Sam Darnold says on Monday Night Football, talks about seeing ghosts, you know, Twitter and a lot of us can like roll our eyes or whatever. But like, how do you bounce back from that? It is, you know, and it's much easier said than done. And again, I go back to Penix and just knowing a little, not everything, but knowing a little about what he's battled through. You know, like I'm a believer in him. I am. I get it. He didn't have a great game against Michigan, you know, but if somehow Texas ends up beating them on like the last play in the red zone or whatever, and his college career ends on that, what are you going to nitpick then? What are you going to nitpick then? Because he was amazing in that game. It was arguably the best performance any quarterback had played in college football that year in a big game. Caleb hadn't done that in a big game like that. You know, Drake May hadn't played any big games of that magnitude. So Jaden Daniels, as good as he was, again, his defense stunk, but it wasn't like he was in that, you know, that kind of game. So I don't know. Didn't mean to steer it all the way on Penix, but
it's great. I don't think anyone here is going to have a problem with you talking about Michael Penix for a while.
No,
We're talking to Bruce Feldman, and let me kind of shift gears though for a moment, because I am fascinated by this Super League story, and I read the piece in The Athletic with Stuart Mandel and Andrew Marchand, who joined me last week when Brock was out. I'm blown away by this idea, and I know there's a lot of obstacles, but of all the things I've heard about to try to bridge the gap between the problems with the old system and some of the problems with the new system, this is the first thing that I think actually makes a lot of sense. Do you think it's got a shot?
I don't want to say it has no shot. The part that I'm skeptical of is the people you need to be pushing it are the Big Ten / Tony Petitti, the commissioner, the SEC, Greg Sankey, the commissioner, and honestly, ESPN, and to some degree Fox, but especially ESPN. And I think those are the four groups that have the least to gain from it, and or are the most who would have to make some kind of hold their nose at some of it. Like the SEC, why does the SEC want to do something very altruistic that's going to help, you know, 30 other teams that are 30 other, you know, universities or businesses that may come at the expense of the bottom line of the SEC? I get it. You know, like the SEC and the Big Ten at some point, if it gets, contracted so much to size, they're going to need somebody to be their Washington Generals every week outside of themselves. But I think there will be those schools just because they won't be making so much money. And so I don't understand that part of it, how they make that work. I get why there are people who are speaking about this. I just, you know, if you're the people from the former Big East and Andrew Marchand, that's those are some of the people he was able to get on the record, which was, you know, a president from Syracuse and maybe one from
Pitt or Western, you know, Virginia.
Like, yeah. So like they're the ones who are kind of getting squeezed by where this is all headed. You know, if you had asked me, and this is kind of a little bit of a non sequitur, but if you'd asked me, you know, this thing with the ACC and Stanford and Cal and SMU, I'd be like, yeah, that doesn't really make much sense to me. Like, you know, I get why there'd be like a short term, like, yeah, let's do this because we need a lily pad to land on. But they're not at the top of the food chain making that decision. And the ones who have a lot of the power, I just don't know how you make it. And I'm not a business guy, obviously, but I don't know how you make it that attractive for Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti to make them go, oh yeah, we'll sacrifice what we got to go back to this.
Yeah, the NFL will probably have to play a role in it. And that was one of the things that kind of jumped out to me about the report, was that the number two guy at the NFL is involved in this project. And so, you know, if you want it to work, you probably need the NFL to strong arm ESPN and Fox and the rest. I mean, you kind of need the NFL's influence on this. So we'll see where it goes. It's obviously very early, and I love the perspective. Thank you for spending some time with us, Bruce. Always good to catch up, and we'll talk again.
Always a pleasure, guys. Make sure you watch Brock's games.
Yeah.
I do. So.
Thank you, yeah, Bruce. Appreciate you.
Even if your partner doesn't watch him on weekends.
No.
Oh, you're the best. Thank you, Brucey. Appreciate it, man. There you guys.
Got to have standards. You know what I mean? You got to have standards in life. And I have standards.
I'm sure Brock appreciates that.
I mean, unfortunately, Bruce doesn't know I don't watch him on Saturdays during the football season either. I just, you know, I got standards. No, I just don't always have time for all of that.
You got a lot of golf to do.
Well, I got things. No, Saturday's my day with the kids. Saturday is the day I try to reserve for hanging with the kids. I just, you know, we work every day. Sunday is generally a bit of a work day for us. People should know. I mean, we prep the show. Friday afternoon is not. At 10 a.m. on Friday,
weekend
I'm not
starts.
Working.
Yeah, weekend
starts at 10 a.m., 9:55. Don't talk to me. Like, I'm not working on Friday. I'm not going to do anything work-related. One time, do you remember that time Kathy tried to get us to go to a meeting at 10 a.m. on Friday? I was like, no. I'm not coming to your meeting on Friday.
Like, I thought it was like 2 p.m.
No, let's get Kathy, get out of here. My weekend starts Friday at 10 a.m. Don't even talk to me. Sunday, you want to have a meeting Sunday afternoon? I'm in. I'm working by Sunday afternoon. Don't tell me we're doing a meeting Friday at 10.
Kathy,
I'm out.
Kathy, I'll do whatever.
Right. But Saturday, like, you know, because Sunday's a work day. That's my day. I want to, like, spend the time with the kids. And, you know, Brock's college football stuff just kind of interferes. So what can I tell you? You know what I'm going to be doing this Saturday, though? I got a little plan.
Are you going to the track?
Going to the track. Uh-huh. And I need to place bets, not like off-track betting type thing. No.
To train for a race.
I got
to
start seeing what 200 looks like.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if I'm going to take on more. So I talked to some people.
So I have run a 200 before. You've never run a 200?
I don't think specifically. I've run a 100, but I don't think I've ever run a 200 itself. Do you sprint the whole way?
I'm more into that.
Yeah, I guess I shouldn't help. I would say just under. You leave another gear for the end. But, you pretty much have to.
Yeah. You got to leave a gear, but
that's
you got to
be moving. That last corner gets a little tougher because you're like, okay.
There's only one corner, though, right? I mean, I guess it's half a
just
track.
Turning,
so there's like a
turning
start,
that half. Yeah.
Yeah.
You.
Do you start next to each other in a 200 or?
It's got to be staggered, right? If you're starting.
Is it staggered? Is it enough? Do you have to stay in your lane and stagger?
Well, most of the track starting lines are.
Staggered.
I guess it depends on where we go.
On 100, you don't stagger, right? Because it's just straight. Straight
away. Yeah, on a 200, I'm pretty sure we did.
We do. Oh, okay, good. Do you want to be in the front or you want to be in the back?
I don't care.
I want to be in the back. I want to be the hunter. I don't want to be the hunted.
Okay.
I don't feel comfortable being hunted.
He told G yesterday when you were out of the room, Justin, like, I have a plan. And I was like, are you going to trip me?
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah. No, I have a plan. I'm going to have somebody come over to throw like, what was this, Terry the linebacker who come in? And
the office linebacker.
Terry office linebacker. Yeah, I've got somebody who's going to help me out on the racetrack. Yeah. There's going to be various obstacles for Maura to dodge as she's trying to run.
How I'm telling you the strategy of a 200, but like I said, I was never a sprinter.
You don't think I'm going to look this up before we race?
I mean,
You don't think I'm going to do my prep? You don't think I have a direct line to Michael Johnson before?
You have to pretty much run all out the whole time. You can leave a little extra gas for the end.
I think it's a good idea to go to the track. Get that spatial awareness. Get your head wrapped around
my
what
bearings.
It looks like.
Yeah, I don't want to just fall out of... I mean, then there's something to be said, though.
Get your focus right.
I'm not doing anything. I'm just going to show up, and if I win, I win, and if I lose, I'll say I didn't really work at it. So if I had gone to the gym to train or the track to train, then I would have been fine. So it's coming up on draft day, the big race, Maura versus Salk. Who will win in a 200-yard dash?
I guess it's
220 because it's a 200-meter
dash. I think we should be very
careful
about saying once we decide where this is happening because people are going to show up.
You think so?
Yeah.
Do you think we should not tell people where it's happening?
Unless you want to.
I don't know whether I do or not. Unless somebody plans to trip Maura, I don't know that I really feel like.
I think we should just film it.
Just be very careful then when discussing.
Here's what I'm going to tell you before we take a little break. Here's what I'm going to tell you. If I were you, I wouldn't eat anything on Wednesday night that you don't like, that you're not sure you prepared, because you don't know if you might get poisoned. I'm just saying you don't want to be like vomiting the next day. You want to make very sure that I'm just saying there's a lot of dirty tricks and you want to make very sure that you're healthy for the race.
Dirty.
Okay?
Dirty.
Okay. We'll be right back. Sprock and Salk, CL Sports on 710 CLSports.com.